Theoretically, the U.S. Constitution governs the land, theoretically, but sometimes supposed scientific emergencies suspend constitutional power for all practical purposes. Efforts to fight supposed climate change could easily be put into such a category. And yet recently, we see President Trump calling the Green New Deal the Green New Scam. We see Bill Gates backing away from climate catastrophism. How are we to understand the issue of climate change? Is it a true crisis, or is it Chicken Little, or maybe something in between? We can try and avoid the issue, but there are some who are so committed to it as an existential threat that they basically implement policies that impact all of us. Steve Gorham is the executive director of the Climate Science Coalition of America. He's the author of 4 books on energy, climate change, and sustainable development, with over 100,000 copies in print. Steve's latest book is Green Breakdown, The Coming Renewable Energy Failure. And you can see all this at SteveGoreham.com. I'm Jerry Newcomb. This is Vocal Point. And Steve, it is great to have you back on the program. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Dr. Newcomb. Great to join you again.
Sure. Okay, so let's start out. What is your opinion? Is this basically, is climate change alarmism, Chicken Little, or is it a true crisis?
Well, I'm sorry to say we live in a world of superstition today. The climate has always been changing, and the climate is something that humans throughout all of history have needed to adapt to storms and to rising oceans and droughts and floods. But now we have over 50,000 people down at Belém, Brazil, at the United Nations COP30, the 30th conference of the parties. And many of those people think that we can now control the climate. The president of Jamaica, or the prime minister of Jamaica, was just talking about Hurricane Melissa, Category 5, which just came ashore. And he was blaming that on human emissions, of course. But, hurricanes, we get about 45 on the surface of the earth every year. They've been going through all of history. An item is that some of the island nations have said that the oceans are rising and that humans are causing it. But again, if you go to NASA, the National Aeronautic and Space Administration, and look at their website, they point out that oceans have been rising for 20,000 years, and they've risen about 120 meters or 390 feet over that period. Well, the idea that we can stop the oceans from rising by all driving electric vehicles, that is an example of modern superstition.
Okay, so I've got a question.
Anyway,
yeah, I've got a question for you. All right, here's my question. Do some of these people who, are proponents of climate change alarmism, do some of them actually own property by the ocean? And if so, wouldn't that be hypocritical?
Well, they do. Many of them do. President Obama has, I think, an oceanfront property. Many people have these oceanfront properties, and so it is somewhat hypocritical. They also fly on private jets, many of them. John Kerry, for example, has said that his work was so important that he should fly everywhere with private jets, even though the private jets emit a lot more carbon dioxide than the average person does every year. So there's a lot of hypocrisy in this, but when you really look at the science and the evidence, you find that nature, not human emissions, dominates global temperatures. You also find that it's been warmer in the past many, many times than it is today. For example, the Romans conquered the Mediterranean 2,000 years ago in those short skirts, the Roman soldiers. At that time, they were growing olives in central Germany, and they were making wine in England. Both of those things are hard to do nowadays. And it was warmer during that period, called the Roman Warm Period, much warmer than it is today. And there have been many times over the last 10,000 years when global temperatures have been warmer than today. So we have a lot of people shouting alarm, but it's really not based on good science.
Interesting. Tell me about Bill Gates and his change or apparent change on this position.
Yeah, this was a huge change. Mr. Gates, of course, is one of the maybe 10 or 20 wealthiest people in the world. He's a billionaire. His foundations have been giving billions of dollars to fight climate change for many, many years now. But he recently sent a memo to COP30 saying that they should stop worrying about cutting emissions, but instead worry about solving the world's problems. And I'm going to quote him here. He said, quote, climate change is a serious problem, but it will not be the end of civilization. He also said that, quote, unfortunately, the doomsday outlook is causing much of the climate community to focus too much on near-term emissions goals. And he also said that, quote, our chief goal should be to prevent suffering, particularly for those in the toughest conditions who live in the world's poorest countries. Now, this is a huge change. Just 4 years ago, he wrote a book that was a New York Times bestseller titled How to Avoid a Climate Disaster. But it appears that Mr. Gates is coming back to common sense. And I think he'll at some point agree that adaptation is the best policy, not mitigation. And also, let's solve the world's problems.
Well, okay. What do you mean by adaptation?
Well, adaptation is like what Netherlands has done for hundreds of years. The oceans have been rising, but they build seawalls and they build artificial islands. What we need to do in the Caribbean to resist against hurricanes is get the income of people and nations up, build strong concrete structures. There's no evidence that we can stop hurricanes if we put up wind turbine towers. Central Africa, 40% of the people don't even have an electric fan. We have hundreds of millions of people in Africa that don't have electricity. So we need to get those people energy and adapt to the climate, not try to think we can change it by what we do with our cars.
All right. What is net zero? And you have said that a rising number of political parties are pushing back against climatism and net zero. But first define net zero and then comment on that political parties pushing back.
Yeah, I write about this quite a bit in Green Breakdown. Net zero is the global push to get to net zero carbon dioxide emissions. We want to stop the use of oil and coal and natural gas, switch to wind turbine and biofuels, and capture carbon dioxide wherever we can't do that. But we now have many major parties that are pushing back against this. The Trump Republican Party in the United States is pretty much canceling all climate programs. We have the leading party in the UK now, not in the legislature, but in all the polls, Reform UK, headed up by Nigel Farage. And they have coined the phrase net stupid zero that they're using. In Germany, we have the number two party in the polls, the Alternative for Deutschland, and the leader of the party, Alice Weidel, has called wind turbines windmills of shame. They want to tear down all the wind turbines in Germany. That's more than 20,000 wind turbine towers. And then just in the last month, we've had two parties in Australia, the Nationals Party and the Liberal Party, that have said, well, we're not going to do net zero anymore. It's just too expensive. The head of the Nationals Party said, we believe in reducing emissions, but not at any cost. So we have all these major political parties that are now saying this climate idea, this net zero just isn't going to fly anymore.
And just to put things into perspective, the wind turbines are bad for the birds. That's one point. They're really terrible when it comes to the looks of the environment and so forth. But the key is that they... You know, even if we had far more wind turbines, it would in no wise meet the match of the needs for energy, correct? I mean, in other words, it's to this day, despite all the promotion of it, it only provides just a fraction of the energy we need, correct?
Well, that's right. We have more than 400,000 wind turbine towers installed around the world in 2024. Yet the world is still getting 87% of our energy from hydrocarbon fuels. That's coal, gas, and oil. And that's because wind turbines just don't provide very much. They're intermittent when you need them. They aren't working. And so despite the fact that we've had these COP meetings since 1995, 30 of them now, there's almost no change in the world's use of hydrocarbon fuels.
And that is spelled how? Like the word COP?
Yeah, COP 30 is what they call the conference there. It's the convergence of the parties. They've been doing these for 30 years now. And if we all live long enough, it might be 50 years. I really hope not. I hope the world gets around to getting sensible again.
In your book called Green Breakdown, you predict that the world is heading for a renewable energy failure. I suppose the wind turbines would be an example of that. Why don't you elaborate on this beyond the wind?
Well, it is. And again, this doesn't mean we won't use any renewables. We're going to have a mixed future, still mostly hydrocarbon fuels, some renewables, but we're not going to get to net zero. That's breaking down. A green energy means higher energy prices, electricity blackouts, less freedom. For example, they want to take away your gasoline car, force you to drive electric, or take away your gas stove. And then these transnational energy shocks for nations that put in a lot of renewables. Like Spain, back in May, we had 50 million people that lost their power within a minute when the system went down. People are going to demand a return to low-cost, reliable energy. And I think the things we've seen with Mr. Gates and with the shifting of these political parties are examples of what is coming.
But I guess even a good question to even ask is the goal itself worthwhile? In other words, cut down all the carbon emissions.
No, carbon dioxide should not be called a pollutant. It makes the plants grow. Every person on Earth exhales 2 pounds of carbon dioxide every single day of our lives. What we need to be focusing on is real pollution. That's carbon monoxide, nitrogen dioxide, ozone, particulates. And the wealthy nations have done a great job of reducing those. In the United States, those pollutants are down 80% over the last 30 years. Plastic in the oceans is another thing we need to reduce. Wastewater going into rivers and lakes and streams. We need to focus on those things and not carbon dioxide. So the world has gotten off track on this climate thing. They're chasing carbon dioxide, which shouldn't be even called a pollutant.
Okay, you and I both have a biblical worldview. God said in the beginning, you know, in the Bible we see this, that he made us in his image. People who don't share that worldview see man as part of the problem, not part of the potentially the solution. So any comment on that? There's almost an anti-human aspect of this whole climate change alarmism.
Well, there is. And humans certainly could do a lot of terrible things to the environment. But again, if you look at what's going on around the world, the air and the water in all wealthy nations is being cleaned up. But we've gotten off track. People now think that we can control carbon dioxide. We control the rise of the oceans. You know, sometimes I ask Christians, do you think that the Lord acts in your daily lives? And most Christians will say, yes, he does. But then I like to ask them, well, when did he lose control over its climate? Which is kind of a big thing. It doesn't really make much rational sense. But indeed, nature still drives Earth's temperatures, not human beings. So we need to get back on track, get rid of the superstition, and come back to sensible energy policy.
All right, we're out of time. Great insights. SteveGoreham.com for more information, GOREHAM. Thank you, Steve. All the best.
Thank you, Dr. Newcomb.